Even after death, some were autopsied, their bodies giving up secrets that the scientists couldn't learn in life. Thousands of women helped with the study. Through their 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond, their contribution to medical science is incalculable. We all benefit from their sacrifice and courage every day of our lives. And among those women who submitted to examination for the good of humanity were some familiar faces. Pearl Payne was one of them. "I believe I was fortunate," she once said of her survival, "in the fact that my radium did not become localized in some of the bones of the body which cannot be removed, as is the case with many of the girls that are dead." Instead of death, Pearl embraced life. She made curtains and dresses on her sewing machine and the best homemade pies, using freshly fallen fruit from the trees in her backyard. Her survival meant she was around when her little sister needed help. "At the time my dad walked out on my mom," Pearl's nephew Randy said, "there was nobody left, nobody to help us. And so Pearl and Hobart were the best people in our lives. They would take care of us." Another dial painter who came to the Argonne laboratory was Marie Rossiter. She survived to see her son, Bill, marry the girl next door, Dolores, and to see her granddaughter Patty grow up to become a dancer. Although for much of her life, Marie had huge and spotty legs from the radium, which forced her to walk with a limp, she would dance with Patty regardless. "She'd always dance with me," remembered her granddaughter fondly. "It wasn't that great, but we danced together. She had a wonderful love for life. I used to look upon her like she could do anything." Marie simply refused to let the radium rule her life. "She was in pain," recalled Dolores. "Pain to walk. Pain to just stand here sometimes. It was that bad." Yet although Marie had her bad times, "I prayed to die and couldn't die," she once said. "Why would I want to live? I had so much pain." She added stoically, "I witnessed the bad times, but you get through them." There was a friend of hers who'd gotten through the bad times too, Charlotte Purcell. She'd been told in the 1930s that she was the Ottawa dial painter most likely to die after Catherine Donoghue, but 30 years later, she was still living. Marie Rossiter put that down to God's intervention, suggesting that he had helped Charlotte, spared her life, because Charlotte had, in turn, helped Catherine. Charlotte had had a sarcoma back in 1934, but her courage in electing to have an amputation undoubtedly saved her life. She lost all her teeth and had one leg shorter than the other, but, like Marie, she refused to let it bring her down. "I now feel fine, although I'm bothered a bit by arthritis," she said to a reporter in the 1950s. "I've gone through all of that years ago. I don't like to think about it." Although it was a time in her life she wanted to forget, when the scientists invited her to Argonne, she answered their call. The doctors had told her that doing so would help others, and Charlotte Purcell was never a woman to turn down an appeal for aid. The research at Argonne uncovered what happened to the Ottawa women's lawsuits after Catherine Donoghue won her test case. Many fought on, with Grossman's help, after that victory in court, though the small pot of money available meant the payouts were not high. Those who did claim were paid only a few $100 each. Charlotte received $300, a negligible sum that made Al Purcell very angry. It paid for the amputation of her arm, and that was about it. Others received nothing. Marie was taken to lunch when she went to Argonne and said, "This is the most we'll probably ever get." Some dropped their cases. The Gluchinsky sisters and Helen Munk were among them. Perhaps they joined forces for Catherine, and upon her death the fight went out of them. There was very little money anyway. Maybe, in the end, it did not seem worth it. It was the judgment they had fought for, and that they had achieved.